The Ichabod by J.K. Rowling. Chapter 1. Fred the Fearless. Once upon a time there was a tiny country called Cornucopia, which had been ruled for centuries by a long line of fair-haired kings. The king at the time of which I write was called Fred the Fearless. He'd announced the fearless bit himself on the morning of his coronation, partly because it sounded nice with Fred, but also because he'd once managed to catch and kill a wasp, all by himself. If you don't count the five footmen and the boot boy. King Fred the Fearless came to the throne on a huge wave of popularity. He had lovely yellow curls, a sweeping moustache, and looked magnificent in tight breeches, velvet doublets, and ruffled shirts that rich men wore at the time. Fred was said to be generous, smiled and waved when everyone caught sight of him, and he looked awfully handsome in the portraits that were distributed throughout the kingdom to be hung in town halls. The people of Cornucopia were most happy with their new king, and many thought he'd end up being even better at the job than his father, Richard the Righteous, whose teeth, though nobody had liked to mention it at the time, were rather crooked. King Fred was secretly relieved to find out how easy it had been to rule Cornucopia. In fact, the country seemed to run itself. Nearly everybody had lots of food. The merchants made pots of gold, and Fred's advisers took care of any little problem that arose. All that was left for Fred to do was beam at his subjects whenever he went out in his carriage and go hunting five times a week with his two best friends, Lord Spittleworth and Lord Flippoon. Spittleworth and Flippoon had large estates of their own in the country, but they found it much cheaper and much more amusing to live at the palace with the king, eating his food, hunting his stags, and making sure that the king didn't get too fond of any of the beautiful ladies at court. They had no wish to see Fred married, because the queen might spoil all of their fun. For a time, Fred had seemed to rather like Lady Eslander, who was as dark and as beautiful as Fred, was fair and handsome. But Spittleworth had persuaded Fred that she was far too serious and bookish for the country to love her as a queen. Fred didn't know that Lord Spittleworth had a grudge against Lady Eslander. He'd once asked her to marry him, but she'd turned him down. Lord Spittleworth was very thin, cunning, and clever. His friend Flippoon was ruddy-faced and so enormous that it required six men to heave him onto his massive chestnut horse. Though not as clever as Spittleworth, Flippoon was still far sharper than the king. Both lords were expert at flattery and pretending to be astonished by how good Fred was at everything, from riding to tiddlywinks. If Spittleworth had a particular talent, it was persuading the king to do things that suited Spittleworth, and if Flippoon had a gift, it was for convincing the king that nobody on earth was as loyal to the king as his two best friends. Fred thought Spittleworth and Flippoon were jolly good chaps. They urged him to hold fancy parties, elaborate picnics, and sumptuous banquets, because Cornucopia was famous, far beyond its borders, for its food. Each of its cities was known for a different kind, and each was the very best in the world. The capital of Cornucopia, Shoeville, lay in the south of the country and was surrounded by acres of orchards filled with shimmering golden wheat and emerald green grass on which pure white dairy cows grazed. The cream, flour, and fruit produced by the farmers here was then given to the exceptional bakers of Shoeville who made pastries. Think, if you please, of the most delicious cake or cookie you have ever tasted. Well, let me tell you, they'd have to be downright ashamed to serve that in Shoeville, unless a grown man's eyes filled with tears of pleasure as he bit into a Shoeville pastry. It was deemed a failure and never made again. The bakery windows of Shoeville were piled high with delicacies such as maiden's dreams, fairies' cradles, and, most famous of all, hopes of heaven, which were so exquisitely, painfully delicious that they were saved for special occasions, and everybody cried for joy as they ate them. King Porphyrio of neighbouring Pluritania had already sent King Fred a letter offering him the choice of any of his daughter's hand in marriage in exchange for a lifetime supply of heaven, hopes of heaven, but Spittleworth had advised Fred to laugh at the Plutarian ambassador's face. His daughters are nowhere near pretty enough to exchange for hopes of heaven. Sire, said Spittleworth, To the north of Jouville lay more green fields and clear, sparkling rivers, where jet-black cows and happy pink pigs were raised. These, in turn, served the twin cities of Kurdsburg and Baronstown, which were separated from each other by an arching stone bridge over the main river of Cornucopia. The Fluma, where brightly coloured barges bore goods from one end of the kingdom to the other. Kurdsburg was famous for its cheeses. Huge white wheels, dense orange cannonballs, big crumbly blue-veined barrels, and little baby cream cheeses smoother than velvet. Baronstown was celebrated for its smoky and honey-roasted hams, its sides of bacon, its spicy sausages, its melting beefsteaks, and its venison pies, the savoury fumes rising from the chimneys of the red brick Baronstown stoves mingled with the odorous tang wafting from the doorways of the Kurdsburg cheesemongers, and for 40 miles all around it was impossible not to salivate, breathing in the delicious air. A few hours north of Kurdsburg was Baronstown. You came upon acres of vineyards bearing grapes as large as eggs, each of them ripe with sweet and juicy. Journey onwards for the rest of the day and you reach the granite city of Jeroboam, famous for its wines. They said of the Jeroboam air that you could get tipsy simply walking its streets. The best vintages changed hands for thousands upon thousands of gold coins, and the Jeroboam wine merchants were some of the richest men in the kingdom. But a little north of Jeroboam, a strange thing happened. It was as though the magically rich land of Cornucopia had exhausted itself by producing the best grass, the best fruit, the best wheat in the world. Right at the northern tip came the place known as the Marshlands, and the only thing that grew there were some tasteless, rubbery mushrooms and thin, dry grass, only good enough to feed a few mangy sheep. The Marshlanders who tended the sheep didn't have the sleek, well-rounded, well-dressed appearance of the citizens of Jeroboam, Baronstown, Kurdsburg, or Jouville. They were gaunt and ragged. Their poorly nourished sheep never fetched very good prices, either in Cornucopia or abroad. So very few Marshlanders ever got to taste the delights of Cornucopian wine, cheese, beef, or pastries. The most common dish in the Marshlands was a greasy mutton broth made of those sheep who were too old to sell. The rest of Cornucopia found the Marshlands to be an odd bunch. Surly, dirty, and ill-tempered. They had rough voices, which the other Cornucopians imitated, making them sound like hoarse, old sheep. Jokes were made about their manners and their simplicity. As far as the rest of the Cornucopia was concerned, the only memorable thing that ever came out of the Marshlands was the legend of the Ichabod.